This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Getting COVID-19 vaccines to the public is a hot topic, and many of us may not be aware of the role supply chain management plays in the background of all of this. Today, we have three experts in the field of supply chain management to offer us some insight. Amru Awashi is an assistant professor of operations management at Kelly School of Business at IUPUI. Mohan Tadikanda is a professor of operations management at Kelly School of Business at IUPUI. And Kyle Katani is a professor of operations management at IU Bloomington. We definitely want to get to the bottom of the great toilet paper and paper towel debacle of 2020. But first, let's get some insight into what supply management is and why it's important. So I'll start off with you, Amru. Can you tell us what exactly is a supply chain and why is it important?
Sure. Good afternoon, Miriam and everybody. So a supply chain is the network between a company, its suppliers and customers. It's what a company needs to deliver on its mission, on its goals. It's how you source your raw materials that come into your operations and how you deliver that to the customers. Like you mentioned, about a year ago, everybody thought supply chain was a black box. We didn't think about it or worry about it. But, you know, retailers need supply chains to get the raw materials that they're going to, or the products that they're going to have to stock the shelves to sell. Hospitals need supply chains as they worry about getting PPE in from the door, you know, into the loading docks, getting shots in patients' arms. It's all these linkages that companies have between each other that they need to deliver on the finished good.
Could you elaborate a little bit, Amru, on maybe an example of something from start to finish, you know, what that kind of looks like?
Sure. So if you can think of PPE, let's think of a mask, right? Everybody's thinking of a mask. You'd need that cotton from somewhere. It needs to go into a cotton mill after it's picked. There's some kind of processing that happens. Then it goes probably to a facility. It's made into a cloth or some larger fabric rolls. Then it's sent to a supplier, probably a manufacturer that would cut it into sizes. And in addition to that, they'd probably need the elastic bands, the little plastic pieces that you're finding, the metal piece that you find on top of the mask. All those need to come together at the facility that's assembling those masks. And then they go on to the retailer and eventually get shipped out to the customer.
Okay. Now, Mohan, can you tell us a little bit about what the role someone who is a supply chain manager, I'm assuming that's a role that someone plays to ensure that all of these moving parts come together?
So, Miriam, it is a role, but it is not always called that. There are people who are involved in the planning and the execution of how we get our work done in our restaurant, in our hospital, wherever it may be, and in working with the people who provide us services and parts and materials and ingredients, and then, of course, our customers and their customers. So supply chain is a very, very broad area with many, many different terms that are used for people who work in different parts of it. A lot of people do supply chain work without a supply chain title or necessarily even recognizing that they are supply chain people specifically. Some common terms are operations manager, procurement, distribution, customer service, and things like that.
All right. Well, we've gotten just a little bit of this background now on this supply chain. Kyle, could you give us a little bit of insight into why we haven't heard so much about it until now? And if there's any particular areas you feel the news industry has not really covered?
Thank you, Miriam. It is interesting to me that supply chain management has been around a long, long time. The Romans were very good at supply chain management. The Mongolian Empire was good at supply chain management. The Ottoman Empire and many other of these empires were good at supply chain management. But in the last few decades, supply chain management capabilities have exploded with the availability of information flows that can travel around the globe instantaneously. And with the concurrent data processing and analysis capabilities that were not possible prior to the advent of the computer and the internet. So material flows have also become dramatically more efficient with cargo ships and multiple modes of transport, such as planes, trains, and trucks. And money is traveling around the globe very quickly. So while the world has become much more connected and interdependent in ways that have dramatically improved our standard of living. At the same time, these advances have made us more vulnerable, not only to the transmission of viruses and things like that, other diseases, but also to these disruptions of the goods and foods and lifestyles that our ancestors never had the opportunity to experience. But ultimately, there are trade-offs in everything. And I think that the press has noted in this past year the vulnerability of supply chains, but I think that the press underappreciates, perhaps, or understates the advancements in supply chain management that have made our lives so much better.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely do want to touch upon this later in the program about sort of security issues with supply chain management and the advent of technology. Would it be fair, Amru, to say that technology has kind of made this a little bit trickier or more difficult to navigate? We often think of technology as this easy answer to everything.
I think technology's made it easier. Unfortunately, what happens is we think that technology will solve all the problems. So technology's enabling us to have more flexible supply chains, have more data and more information, and thus building on what Kyle's talking, we're responding faster. But it's not a button, that an easy button that we press that'll fix all our problems.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of getting things to run efficiently and using technology, Mohan, How does one actually get a supply chain to run efficiently? What is sort of the best practice?
It's amazing to think about and to see. So the key to supply chains running and running efficiently is coordination. It's purposeful coordination. It's the planned interactions of your organization with your suppliers and your customers. So the restaurant's interactions with the folks that provide the ingredients, and the restaurant's interactions with people that purchase from them. And then those who provide the ingredients may have had their own suppliers who help them with the cans for the ingredients. And then the customers of the restaurant may have their own customers, and they break down a bigger batch of food into a smaller batch. So we have all these moving parts, and the key to successful supply chains is recognizing the different parts and planning ahead of time how they will interact with each other. So this requires a bit of a supply chain mindset instead of a go-it-alone mindset. We're just one organization. We'll do our own thing. But we have to think about working with other organizations. And it is often said that it's not necessarily an individual organization that competes or serves. It's actually an entire supply chain that competes or serves. So we might think about the hospital, but we're really thinking about the entire hospital supply chain when we think about the hospital that's providing services.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with three experts in the field of supply chain management. Amru Awayshe is an assistant professor of operations management at Kelly School of Business at IUPUI. Mohan Tatikanda is a professor of operations management at Kelly School of Business at IUPUI as well. And Kyle Kitani is a professor of operations management at IU Bloomington. So let's talk about the vaccine. I think that is something that is on everyone's mind right now. Like, why can't anyone seem to get it together with distributing this vaccine, and how does supply management factor into all of this? Are they just, are we shooting the messenger with supply management folks, or do they have a huge role to play? Amru, what do you think?
Sure. I mean, the first thing we need to keep in mind is these vaccines are entirely new, right? This is simply a product that we did not have 12 months ago. We didn't need to worry about it. And a lot of us have been following maybe the clinical trials and development of the vaccines from that end, but we haven't been thinking about, okay, after they are approved, how are we going to get these shots in arms? And really, these are entire supply chains that had to be built out from scratch. And so we can think of the first mile. How are these companies getting the vaccines from their manufacturing facilities into these central distribution areas, and what we see the federal government kind of shipping them out to the various states and the allotment they're getting on a weekly basis, the middle mile, which is where they're sending it from the state, is sending out to these various places, and finally the final mile. And I think what a lot of people are worried about is this last mile delivery, and we started to hear that Amazon is very good at this last mile delivery. How can we incorporate some more of these e-commerce players? And really, we've come together quite well. Just today, we're hearing news in remote areas of the Appalachian Mountains, remote areas in Arizona. There's all these people are getting now shots in arms. So we've figured out these various elements. I think the key to understand is, again, this is simply a thing that did not exist before that we have to worry about. But we are now, as part of the planning, I mean, there was some planning that went ahead that enabled us to get ready. If you think about these vaccines, some of them are needed to be stored in ultra cold storage. And I'll give you an example of things that people didn't need to worry about. So when that package arrives, a person can't just put their hands in there and take the vial out. It's extremely cold. So you have to ship these vaccines with special gloves that somebody can wear that would enable them to put their hand in and take the vaccines out of ultra cold storage. I mean, it's this kind of detail that you think about. There was a lot of discussion around the sixth dose that was present in some of the Pfizer vials. Well, you needed special kinds of needles, very precise needles to extract that sixth dose. And there are many instances in places where they ran out of those needles and they didn't have the necessary supply. So they were wasting that sixth dose. They simply could not extract that sixth dose from the vial. So it's getting all these elements that you need to come together at the right time to be able to deliver the shot in the arm. The best way to think about it is if they run out of the rubbing alcohol that they need to put on before they inject the needle in there, they simply can't administer the vaccine.
That's really fascinating. I'd never heard about all these sort of little details that go with the vaccine. You just imagine it's a bunch of vials being sent and then somebody opens them up and gives them to people. So, I mean, how does supply chain management factor into that? Are they making sure all of these pieces are together, let's say, in the shipment before it goes out?
Yes. I mean, so some components they try and include in the shipment as it's going out, but it's also coordinating with the suppliers, with the needle suppliers, with the alcohol swab suppliers, with the Band-Aid suppliers that need to be put on after to make sure that, because they're not all coming from the same location. So how do we make sure they all arrive at the same time when you need to deliver that vaccine? And it's a complicated process, and that's how you compete with the entire supply chain working hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's definitely something to think about, and I think you've really brought to light an aspect that many of us have overlooked and underappreciated, which is there are so many different pieces to this puzzle. We'll be right back in a bit. We are speaking with our guests about how the pandemic pushed the field of global supply chain management to the forefront. You can get in on the conversation with your questions and comments by tweeting us at All in Indiana or leave us a note on our Facebook page. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We also have a special app called All in Vox Pop. You can find it in the App Store on your phone where you can leave us an audio message, and we'd love to include it on the show. So if you have a moment, let us know how you think about how things have been handled right now with supply chain management. I'm Miriam Soeb. We'll be back shortly. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. We're talking today about the importance of supply chains during a pandemic and beyond. Just before the break, we were talking about the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine and all the intricate details involved in making sure the many different elements needed arrive together to their destination. We're joined today with Amru Awashi, an assistant professor of operations management at Kelly School of Business at IUPUI, Mohan Tatikanda, professor of operations management at Kelly School of Business, IUPUI, and Kyle Katani, also a professor of operations management, but he's at IU Bloomington. And a reminder, we'd love to hear what you have to say on this topic. A great way to do that, leave us a voice message through the All In Vox Pop app. Just search for it in your phone's app store or tweet us at All In Indiana. Now, we're talking about this vaccine and the rollout and all of the different elements that are involved. Kyle, I'm wondering, you know, how has Indiana performed in getting vaccines to the state's various health facilities?
Well, Miriam, that's actually a good question. And there are some subtleties to it that make it a little bit difficult to assess. There are websites that perhaps the basic way to look at it is to think about the percentage of vaccines that have actually been administered as a percentage of the vaccines that have been distributed to the states. So the government is allocating the vaccines to the states, and it's a question of what percentage of the vaccines that have arrived at the states have been put into people's arms. And if you look at that list, North Dakota currently leads all states with 89% administered, followed by New Mexico at 88%. Indiana is very much in the pack, just right in the middle, at about average at about 78% of the shots that we've received have been put in people's arms. But of course, it's not equally easy for all states to get those shots in the arms, as the states vary in population density and other demographics. So, for example, Alaska is 47th on the list with an administrative percentage of 70% of the shots that they've, of the vaccines that they've received have gone into arms. But interestingly, Alaska is second in the list of all the states in terms of the share of the population that has been given one dose. So this tells me that perhaps Alaska was allocated a few extra vaccines to compensate for its challenging geography. So on the other hand, in terms of the share of population fully vaccinated, Indiana is 21st of all states. But in terms of the percentage of the population with at least one dose, they're only 43rd. So this tells me that the state has been cautious in opening up the vaccine to new groups and focusing on making sure that there are sufficient vaccines available for those who have had one shot and need the second one. So all of these things come together. As near as I can tell, Indiana has been doing fairly well. They are using the shots the government is allocating to them, although it looks like they're apparently giving priority to the second shots.
Mm-hmm. Now, from when the rollout began to the present, have there been any improvements made into how these vaccines are getting to their destination? Was there trial and error in the beginning and then folks noticed like, oh, actually, there's a better way to get things done?
So absolutely. Amru mentioned a number of things that there's in all things in supply chain and operations management, there's what's called a learning curve that the supply chains get smarter and they figure out how to tap into the resources that are available and to become more effective at making things happen. And we've absolutely seen whether, as Amru mentioned, getting that sixth dose out of the vial or making sure. One of the things that's been really challenging is that as you add constraints to the problem, it becomes harder. And one of the constraints that they've added in this supply chain is that they say it's not just first come, first serve on who gets it. They've actually have a strict process for, okay, it's first, we're going to start with the medical community, then we'll start looking at the nursing homes, and then we'll do it age-based, everybody over 70, 65, and it's been going down. It's now actually down to everybody over 45. But as you add these constraints to the process, it complicates the supply chain, because what happens if you have a few doses that have been thawed and you have to use them before they go bad and you don't have somebody in the right demographic? And so all of these things have been processes that the distributors, the people in the supply chains have been figuring out and they've been getting better at. There's definitely a learning curve and they're definitely progressing down the learning curve and getting better at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the way things have been distributed, Mohan, I'm wondering, has this been the best way, the way that different states are kind of allocating things? And in your expert opinion, what would have been the ideal sort of distribution strategy?
Miriam, that's a $10 billion question. And there are going to be a 1,001 opinions on this. And frankly, some of it comes down to political leanings. One of the things that we've talked about is the novelty of some of the supply chains that have had to be put in place for this pandemic situation. Creating a vaccine with new technology, distributing large quantities of the made vaccine via super cold facilities, and all that is new. And there are different organizations along the way that are very good at doing particular things, like the R&D for a vaccine, mass production of a vaccine, mass production of the vials for the vaccine, shipping via truck in super cold truck containers. There's expertise in that. And so the supply chain needs to be an amalgam of all of these particular expertise areas. And that's why we need the coordination of these disparate entities that are really good at the thing that they do. But ultimately, it's the entire supply chain that provides the good or the services that we need, like the PPE at the right place or the vaccine in someone's arm. So one of the debates that I think that we will hear more about when we start to have the opportunity to reflect more on preparation for a future pandemic or another similar emergency is how much to have already in place, an existing system for distribution, existing capacity to make vaccines, as part of the industrial imperatives over these last decades, some organizations and some states try to cost minimize. And the whole idea of lean operations and lean supply chains became very, very popular. And lean is also sometimes referred to as just in time. When we're lean, then we don't have extra. We don't have extra beds in the ICU. We don't have extra R&D scientists to make vaccines. We don't have extra glass vials. To be more resilient and prepared for the future, we may want to put in place some of this extra capacity, have it ready to go. And even if it's not working, having it ready so that it can be started up and ramped up very quickly. My friend and colleague Kyle Catani said, supply chains have learning curves. One of the wonderful, amazing things about supply chains is that they do adapt. They do adapt over time. We can set up our supply chains to be more resilient in the future. The other thing is, when we have the R&D scientists and then the vaccine makers and the people who make the glass vials, who is ultimately in charge of all of that? Who's going to help bring to bear that coordination and set the priorities and think about the trade-offs? To the degree that we have more central planning for that, be it at the state or the federal government, we will have better preparation and a more consistent rollout across the different regions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking today about the importance of supply chains during a pandemic and beyond. Amro, I want to ask you, kind of going off of what Mohan was talking about, is there anything that you saw when it came to things rolling out during this pandemic that you immediately thought, no, that's not the way to do it? And are you seeing more folks that are making these decisions turning to experts in supply chain management to figure out what the right way is to do things?
I think it's always easy to go back in history, and hindsight is always 20/20. So, of course, looking back, we can always have done any various element of the whole rollout differently. But I think we're on a good track now, and it seems like the pace that we've set and the number of vaccines that we're getting in arms on a daily basis is putting us on a good track. Again, there are things that we're going to be learning. We're finding out now that there's a shortage of the rubber stoppers that go on top of the vials that are needed. And so those suppliers are running out. And so if you don't think of the supply chain as a whole picture, when we're trying to get billions of vials produced, we've got to think of all the elements that are needed in the supply chain. And I think it's on everybody's mind now and on the horizon. And I'm fairly confident that we'll be able to figure this out moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And Kyle, I would ask you the same question. It sounds like there are so many moving parts that just we often overlook here. I would never have thought about the rubber stoppers on the vials as something that's necessary. And obviously, if you run out, then how are you going to ship things? So are there things that you're learning now that would change the way things will move forward?
I agree with Amru that it is a very tough problem, and it's a question of who owns these problems. And so there's all of this debate about the incentives for supply chains are, as Mohan said, to become very lean and to not have extra resources, but this creates some vulnerabilities. So there may be some rationale for having involvement of some of the strategic stores of some of the parts that we really need. Or one of the things in supply chains that can add a lot of value is to have a little bit of spare capacity. But capacity is very expensive, and so capacities have been tended to be run as lean as possible. But it may be that we need a little bit more capacity so that we have a little bit more flexibility to respond when things happen.
Mm-hmm. And have there ever been instances where a company might overproduce something just to make up for that and then end up having too much product? I'm curious to know what would happen in that instance.
That is an absolute reality, and that's one of the incentives that companies and supply chains have to keep things lean, because if you produce too much, that's incredibly expensive, and so there's not a lot of incentive to produce extra. If you have more capacity, then at least you can respond a little bit more after the fact, after something happens, but it's very expensive, and so there are trade-offs, and there's no easy answer there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get to this toilet paper topic, because I think that's just the joke that keeps on giving, or whatever you want to call it. so much internet sensation over this. Armu, a year ago, toilet paper was not only flying off the shelves, people were hoarding it for who knows when. What happened there? Can you give us some insight on that?
Sure. I think the best way to think about it is what Kyle Mohan have been talking kind of efficient supply chains, and that's where we focus a lot of. There's two ways to think about supply chains. They're either responsive supply chains or efficient supply chains. And with responsive supply chains, we worry about optimizing delivery, make sure we built in a lot of spare capacity, but that costs money, right? So we need to charge the customer more. And you can have that when you're shipping a $2,000 iPhone or a laptop all over the world. That makes sense. But when you're selling something like a 50-cent roll of toilet paper, you want an efficient supply chain. And the goal of that is to really run as close to full capacity as you can, to squeeze out as much cost as you can, to be really as efficient as possible. And so the cost trade-off allows you to compete on costs. And you want toilet paper to be in an efficient supply chain. You want the, I mean, if you want to charge $10 for a roll of toilet paper, sure, you can fly it all over the country. But you want that truck full all the way to the brim. And I think that's what Mohan and Kyle are talking about. We're seeing managers have to deal with this trade-off of how do you keep the costs low, but understand that maybe you can't build in as much capacity, as extra capacity as you would like. And part of the reason is these efficient supply chains can really not deal with more than about 10% flex or increase in capacity. And so when you had overnight people increase their demand, not used, I guess used maybe, their demand for toilet paper about 200-300%, there's just simply no way for the supply chain to catch up, and they ran out of toilet paper. And that's where we started seeing the hoarding. And then that kind of aggravated the problem more. It's something that we all teach in supply chain called the bullwhip effect, right? And so you don't see it a lot in shelves. And so people start buying more. And when you buy more, the retailers run out more. And that gets, you know, everybody around you to see, okay, there isn't toilet paper on the shelf. People start hoarding more and more. And guess what? You know, there's no more toilet paper anywhere. And that's the problem. A textbook problem that we've teach in all our classes that we got to see play out in the real world.
Mm-hmm. And Mohan, how did that play out in Indiana? Was it similar to the rest of the nation with this toilet paper shortage?
So Miriam, there's nothing more delightful to talk about than toilet paper. So the toilet paper situation is fascinating because a lot of what we've talked about is purposeful planning and coordination. But we also have to keep in mind that there's human behavior. Some people will say that's at contrast with rational planning and so forth. But obviously we have to account for humans. They are an important part of what's going on. So we had a bit of the classic in Indiana run on the white things because of an emergency, and then toilet paper was one of those white things. But as Amber said, I really don't think people were necessarily needing to use more toilet paper. Another thing that was happening is that so we have this spike in demand, this increase in demand, even though not necessarily usage, and the toilet paper supply chain simply could not grow fast enough to accommodate all of the hoarding. Those problems have worked themselves out. The other thing is with people working from home or going to school from home or whatever it may have been, is their consumption of toilet paper increased in the household, but less in the schools or in the workplace or the gyms or wherever it may have been. And so this tells us also that there are overlapping and different supply chains. There's a supply chain for getting toilet paper to the retailers and to consumer homes. There's actually a slightly different supply chain that gets toilet papers to offices and industrial settings. And that toilet paper is packaged differently. It's not in as small of a roll. Sometimes it's in giant rolls. Sometimes it's maybe a little less fluffy. And so converting that supply chain, where all of a sudden there weren't people needing as much toilet paper in the offices, converting that to consumer usable toilet paper was challenging for some companies. Some restaurants and others that would get these large rolls were selling them to make up for some of the increased demand and so forth. Everything worked out just fine, but there was a lot of tension for at least a couple of weeks.
Yes, definitely. I mean, you could probably get a toilet paper roll on eBay for $20. That's how desperate it was getting. I wonder how much of this is sort of like a reverse psychology effect where something looks like it's scarce when it may not in fact be.
So again, this is human behavior, a lot to do with hoarding. And you know, I'm not really sure we needed to buy more toilet paper, but we were concerned, so we bought some. And I'm a professor of this stuff; I should know better. Yes, but this is predictable human behavior. And so, as we plan our supply chains, it's something that we need to think about and account for and plan for.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I also know that bidets were also being sold out. I was looking on Costco or Amazon or places like that, and I was like, wow, now everyone wants to use water too? I thought it was just me. But anyway, we'll be back after a quick break. We're talking supply chain management and unveiling the ins and outs of how products and vaccines get to us. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. Or you can send us a voice message without making a call by using our smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. That's VOXPOP. I'm Miriam Soeb. We'll be back in just a short break. After a short break, you're listening to All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. Before the break, we were discussing how shortages on things like toilet paper caused consumer panic buying and a shift in the supply chain. With us to discuss the importance of supply chain management are Amru Awashe, an assistant professor of operations management at Kelly School of Business, IUPUI. Mohan Tadikanda, professor of operations management at Kelly School of Business, also IUPUI. And Kyle Katani, a professor of operations management at IU Bloomington. Now, Kyle, I could talk about toilet paper all day. I find it fascinating and human behavior as well when it comes to that stuff. But beyond toilet paper and bidets, were there other products that were affected by the pandemic?
Well, Miriam, I have to confess that I have a very large extra pack of toilet paper from Sam's Club sitting in my closet as well. I'm a little bit embarrassed, but I guess I contributed to the hoarding as well. There absolutely were a number of products that were affected. And I think it's interesting to contrast, for example, toilet paper with paper towels, both of which came in short supply. While, as we discussed, the demand for toilet paper presumably did not shift that much, the usage, the demand because of hoarding, but there was no underlying change in the demand. But if you look at paper towels, in contrast, not only would you get the hoarding, but there would be an increase in demand because people were using more paper towels to clean because for the virus, we wanted to use everything clean. Mm-hmm. Not only paper towels, but generally all cleaning supplies were flying off the shelves. And I think that was not only was there a hoarding aspect to it, but there was actually a fundamental increase in demand. Some industries, the ones that are very competitive and capital intensive, like the paper industry, don't have a lot of spare capacity. And so they were the ones that would struggle the most. So the toilet paper industry, the paper towel industry, found it very difficult to respond. Others in the cleaning industry, they were able to respond a little bit more quickly because it's not as difficult to add capacity, although it took a little while for the supply chains to adjust. But it was really interesting to look at grocery stores in general. And see how many things were emptied there. Much of it, of course, was due to hoarding, but it was also interesting that, as Mohan mentioned with the toilet paper in the supply chain, a lot of the grocery supply chain had to do a shift because a significant amount of the food that we eat in our society is at restaurants, and this was, as restaurants were closed down, meant that consumers had to buy the food at the grocery store, which was not equipped. The supply chains were sending the food to the restaurants. So the supply chains had to figure out how to adjust by redirecting, repackaging in many cases, the food to get it to the grocery store where the consumers would get it. Consumers don't generally take home, for example, 5-gallon barrels of oil or other things that are mm-hmm. that would be shipped to to restaurants. So not only did the suppliers have to redirect deliveries, but they had to repackage them. And so at first we saw a lot of interesting examples where, for example, farmers that had to dump milk into the fields because they couldn't have, the supply chain was not equipped to process it in the way that they needed to in order to get to the grocery stores. So at the start of the pandemic, especially, we saw a lot of shortages of a lot of products beyond that of the toilet paper that was so highly visible.
Right, right. And you know, speaking of restaurants, in Indiana, you know, restaurants had to shift to some carryout situations. How did that affect the supply chain? Mohan, I don't know if you want to address that.
Sure. So a restaurant's a great example, and we'll think of that as the focal entity, the center part of the supply chain. But the restaurant has its customers, and sometimes the customers have their own customers or other people that they're trying to serve. And then the restaurant has its immediate suppliers providing the raw materials, dishware, takeout supplies, and so forth. And those suppliers have their own suppliers. And so it's a great example of just how big and complicated a supply chain can be, even for a small organization. Now, in Indiana, we saw a number of very significant impacts on restaurants. Simply less demand in some situations, certainly less demand for in-person eating because it was disallowed or thought to be unwise. So here we have instance of a change in the supply and the demand. The supply might have been there, but the demand changed a lot. And then we saw that in turn led to worker layoffs and so forth. Some of the restaurants were adaptive. They were ingenious and innovative, perhaps under a very frustrating situation. But some of them changed their services. They might have been really good at making pasta. Now they reduced and simplified their menu, but made larger quantities of pasta that really held well when it was taken out. So they adapted to a new form of demand. Instead of the in-person dining with a plate of food, it was getting set up for doing a lot more of larger volume takeout. So this is a change in how they thought about what they were making, how they were serving their customers, and sometimes what kinds of materials that they'd need. Also, we saw innovation with the restaurants rethinking their existing service processes, how they were serving their customers. One of the first things many organizations did was think about all the ways they interact with the customer who comes into the restaurant or seeks a takeout. And then for every one of the steps along the way, how can we make it touchless? Or how can we make it more touchless? And so that was a redesign of the work processes and how we produce and serve. So I think that there were a lot of adaptations. Yes.
Well, what about when it comes to Indiana businesses, Amru? Are there any great examples of folks who've been able to really have a solid supply chain management operations going?
Yes, and part of the reason is we're very lucky in Indiana, being at the crossroads, having so many major highways flow through central Indiana. We've positioned ourselves, again, pre-pandemic, to be really involved in the supply chain. You've got some of the largest air freight hubs here in the world, a lot of distribution centers for a lot of companies, and that's kind of enabled us to already be in the supply chain game, so to speak, and be involved. So a lot of goods are already flowing through here, and we were able just to continue to partake in that growth that we've seen in supply chains.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as not to keep going back to, the demand of toilet paper, but something that I wonder is, what about the security when it comes to supply chain management? Now that there's technology and all these things online, could a disruption similar to what we saw, even though that was on a consumer end, happen through technology? I don't know, bad actors hacking into systems, disrupting things?
Absolutely, 100%. That's a wonderful question. The impact of cybersecurity on supply chains, where you're thinking of just simply bad actors coming in and influencing demand, so manufacturers don't really understand what customer demand is for the various products, taking factories online or offline, or just disrupting the supply chain. Can you imagine, truckloads of vaccines going to wrong states or wrong places, you know, a state that would just get two truckloads worth of Band-Aids and no vaccine and vice versa. And there's a large potential for bad actors to have a play in this. And I think it's very important for companies to understand the role that technology plays in their supply chain and how they're protecting their supply chain infrastructure from hackers or bad players from both within and outside the firm.
Mm-hmm. And Kyle, are there any examples of technology that companies are using to combat this type of issue?
Well, yes, there are. And it's interesting, a number of things. Well, I want to back up and say that at its core level, our society depends on most people being above board, and that, mm-hmm. that if there were bad actors, there are so many vulnerabilities in our society, not just in supply chains, that they could be overwhelmed. That said, we need to take precautions. So it's been interesting, even with the vaccine distribution, that the issues that they've had to address and some of the technologies that they've been using. For example, Mohan mentioned that the vaccines have to be held at minus 90 degrees Fahrenheit, and that creates some vulnerabilities. So one of the technologies that they are using are these GPS-enabled thermal sensors that track the location and the position and the temperature of the vaccine shipment, providing what is called time and temperature history. And so this way they can track to make sure that the vaccines stay in higher quality. And that sometimes is used in conjunction with another emerging technology that is called blockchain, where this is a technology that some of us are more familiar with in its separate application to create Bitcoin. But it also has a number of supply chain applications. Blockchain creates a permanent, unalterable record that is secure and accessible by only those who need it, and provides an audit trail that provides some protection against bad actors, if you will. And so blockchain not only makes it possible to have digital currencies like Bitcoin, but it has some interesting uses in supply chain management, and I think we will see more and more of this. Another of the emerging technologies that we're seeing a lot of is the use of artificial intelligence and machine learning. Supply chains are collecting just massive quantities of data and mind-boggling amounts. And some of this creates vulnerabilities, but it also creates these opportunities to use tools such as artificial intelligence or machine learning to find patterns that make us use the supply chains more efficiently and perhaps protect us from some of the things that can happen. So I think that artificial intelligence and machine learning are also important tools in supply chains that can help us in this regard. But ultimately, mm-hmm. we're reliant on a society that, for the most part, is well-behaved, shall I say.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is a hot topic in the news now, this idea of supply chain management. Have you seen that correspond to more people looking into this as a career? Amaru, would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. We are seeing more and more students being interested in careers in supply chain. Again, we're very lucky in Indiana, so they can get a lot of careers and stay local in central Indiana. And I think that's one of the bigger drives. I can tell you pre-pandemic, it is the highest paying major out of our undergraduate students that graduate. Supply chain management pays the most. And so, mm-hmm. you know, couple that with being able to stay in Indiana and the low cost of living we have, it really makes it to be an attractive career. Plus, you know, we've been all talking about these technology and various elements and the impact it has on life, where maybe a lot of people didn't understand that a few years ago about what impact supply chain can have on people's lives. You know, now they can go home and say, oh, I work in supply chain, and their parents would understand that. So it's made it more attractive from that point.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mohan, Amru is saying this is a high-paying career. Can you tell us what is like a starting salary in a field like this? Maybe I need to switch jobs.
we'd be happy to help you with that. I'm hesitant to give a number because it varies by industry sector, being healthcare or automotive manufacturing, those who go into consulting versus stay with the company in-state and out-state. But just suffice it to say that the supply chain, the undergraduate majors from the IUPUI portion of the Kelley School get the highest salaries of any of our undergraduates compared to finance, marketing, and so forth. And the demand for our graduates is enormous. Nearly every single one of them gets hired straight out. Companies are asking for even more people that have supply chain background. And so we actually, as academics, have a bit of our own supply chain issue to plan for. The specialty courses in the supply chain area are generally junior and senior level courses. We are seeing enrollments go up. But it'll be another year or two before we see this increased enrollment in some of these supply chain courses. So we're going to need to teach more courses, teach more students, maybe have more professors, which is, of course, always a good thing.
And Kyle, are you seeing similar trends at IU Bloomington?
We are indeed. And what's interesting to me is that when we look at the freshmen entering into the Kelley School of Business, as they enter, they express a preference for some of the traditional areas that they're familiar with, which would include marketing and finance. A very few of them list operations and supply chain management. And yet, as they go through the program, by the time they're juniors and seniors, many of them shift to supply chain management because they recognize, oh, wow, this is a thing, and it's a good there are good salaries. I don't know the exact salaries, but I could say that the discussion we're having in the country about minimum wage really isn't relevant to the graduates who are graduating in supply chain management. They're making significantly more than the $15 per hour. But so what's interesting is that supply chain management still is not as well known. So when you're in high school and you're thinking about going to college, you think, oh, supply chain's not what comes to many of their minds. But by the time they get 1 or 2 or 3 years into the program, many of them shift. And so we have a pretty good market share, if you will, in terms of the number of students who are studying supply chain management by the time they graduate.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the typical careers that would come out of this? Would they be managing a company's supply chain, or, you know, what are some of the examples of that?
So, there's a myriad number of paths that they can take. Some of them go to consultants and actually help firms as they look at their supply chains. Many of them are analyst positions within firms looking at supply chain problems. We have you can become a procurement specialist or a logistics specialist. You can work in manufacturing areas. There are any number of different paths that you can take within supply chain management.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we wrap up, we just have a few minutes. Amru, what is something you think people still don't understand about supply chain management that you hope that they'll take away from this?
Just the fact that it's complicated. I mean, I wish there was a short answer or something easy to say. Like when everybody was worrying about toilet paper, we'll go back to that for a sec. It's hard to make a toilet paper factory put in place a toilet paper supply chain. So when people wanted, toilet paper right then and there, it takes some time to build out that factory, get the suppliers in place, get all the various elements that they need to enable that demand or increased demand that we saw with customers. So just understand that it's a lot more complex than a single word answer.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to learn more about supply chain management and to, be reassured that we will have toilet paper this year and we don't need to worry too much about that. I'd like to thank all of our guests for joining us today. Amru Awashe is an assistant professor of operations management at Kelley School of Business, IUPUI. Mohan Tadakonda, professor of operations management at the Kelley School of Business, IUPUI. And Kyle Katani, a professor of operations management at IU Bloomington. Thank you to everyone who joined us in this conversation today. You can listen to the entire episode or past episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Our producers are Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, and Tim Brock. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. You can join us tomorrow as we find out if college graduates are getting enough preparation to enter the workforce. And don't forget, you can connect with us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. We also have our very own app. It's called All in Vox Pop. You can find it in your smartphone app store, where you can send us a voice message without making a call. All you have to do is search for All in Vox Pop and leave us a message. And then, of course, you can call us at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thank you again for joining us. You've been listening to All In. We'll see you again tomorrow.